Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shante, who will be performing Saturday, May the 25th, 2013, at 4 o'clock p.m. at the Peace Center on the campus of USC, celebrating Memorial Day weekend. We will hear more about that event during our community calendar. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. Listen to our live, you can listen to us live, or you can download our show and any past show by Googling in Qumran Report and hit iTunes. Now, this week we'll be hearing some voices, some community voices, from Hunger Action LA. But first, I have on the line Nancy Mills, founder of The Spirited Woman. Nancy, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so good to hear your voice again. Can you tell our listening audience exactly what is The Spirited Woman?
Spirited Woman was founded about 13 years ago, and it's a woman's empowerment community. And we've grown substantially through the years. We have a lot of women involved around the world now, and it's all about helping to heal and support women through actions of empowerment. And it's been a great ride.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I like it a lot. Now, let me ask you this, Nancy. Who are some of the women that inspired you?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. There's been so many. I think what I love the most about life, actually, is books. I love to travel, but I love to read. I read all the time. And I'm constantly inspired by women authors. I'm constantly inspired by women characters in books. So I wouldn't say it's a particular person as much as it's a particular genre. I lose myself through the words of others. I lose myself through the stories of others. And I'm always inspired by a new idea or a new way of expression.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now, can you, I would like to throw out a few comments relating to women's and then get your comments and your thoughts on them. First one is, what are your thoughts about women in the military and in combat?
You know, I think it's all good. I mean, if women want to do that, it's all the more power to them. I myself have a hard time putting on a Band-Aid. So I don't know if I relate to somebody who wants to have that kind of a life. But mm-hmm. at the same token, I think it's important for somebody to be able to have the choice to have that kind of a life. Mm-hmm. So there are two different issues there. And mm-hmm. it's that choice is very important.
Okay. Now, the next thing, what are your thoughts about a woman for president?
Absolutely. And I think it's coming. I think we're going to have a woman president within the next two, three elections. I just think it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's absolutely going to happen. And I just like Obama was elected, and here is this black guy who becomes president, and everybody's like, oh my God, how can this happen while we're alive? Well, it did, and I think he completely and totally paved the way for everybody. I mean, he's an incredible role model and for everything, and I think that that is... I think it's inevitable that we're going to have a woman president. And I think when we do, I don't even think we're going to think about it. I think there'll be like a week, oh, my God, she's a woman president. But then it's going to be like, let's get down to business.
Yeah. Do you think it's a bigger challenge for a woman or for an African-American president?
You know, I can't say because I'm not African-American. I would say that... there's a lot of bias, whether you're African-American or a woman, and I think that you have to be incredibly intelligent and incredibly with it to win the political wars that encumbers when you're part of a minority, whether you're black or whether you're a woman. I think you have to be particularly shrewd and particularly smart.
Okay, great answer. Now, can you tell us about, I think you got a special event coming up this month, right? With the spiritual woman?
Yeah, you know, we don't do that many on Earth events, but we are doing one upcoming on May 18th, and it's all about celebrating creativity. It's going to be a great, great luncheon. You know, it's something where you'll be able to express your creativity, your playfulness. Everyone who comes is going to be getting the Painted Muse scarf, which is a scarf that is part of our Sisterhood of the Sacred Scarves. We have Spirited Woman Prayer Scarves. Mm-hmm. And so this event is all about celebrating creativity. We anticipate about 20 to 25 women. And I will say this, the women who are involved with Spirited Woman are really nice. Mm-hmm. They're embracing. Very often you'll go to women's events and you could be a tree. Nobody talks to you. at our events, it's very, very different that way. And I would so welcome people from your community, people who are listening to this radio show, people who are downloading this radio show. Mm-hmm. You're all welcome to join us. You can go to thespiritedwoman.com, and there's a T-H-E in there, so it's thespiritedwoman.com, and you can find out information. But I think it's going to be wonderful, and it's going to be at a beautiful private home, which is filled with art. Mm. So how could it be anything but great?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Nancy, thank you very much. Any closing comments or any other contact information you want to give?
Well, my closing comment is this. What you're doing is absolutely fantastic, and I commend you for all the good that the two of you give back to the Skid Row community and all the good that you're doing in this world to help people believe that if you're strong enough and if you're unstoppable, you can achieve your dreams. And I really, really want to thank both of you for being role models to me.
Okay, let me see if Arlene want to say something and ask you a question. This is Arlene.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
You're my champion of causes. It's so good to have you call in. I was hoping to have you in person in the studio, but your calling in will suffice and get you off the hook. I think we're 1-1 now.
Well, I think we are, and I appreciate so much what you're doing.
Well, bless your heart, and thanks so much for calling in.
All right. You take care of yourself. Wishing you nothing but the best.
You too.
Okay, thank you, Nancy.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, that's Nancy Mills from The Spirited Woman. Now, I'm delighted to have with us in the studio two members from the organization Hunger Action LA, Frank Tamborello.
That's right.
And John Jackson. Welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you for having us.
Now, first of all, let's start with Frank, and then we move over to John. Tell us a little about yourself and how did you get involved with Hunger Action LA?
So I actually used to live in Texas, Houston, Texas, and was doing some organizing out there with ACORN. And after that kind of fizzled out for a little while, I was I was told there was a hunger study going on, which was a nationwide study called the Childhood Hunger Identification Project. And what that meant is that we were basically going door to door and asking people at some point during the survey if they ever sent their kids to bed without food. And so I was kind of taken aback when a couple of the women that we interviewed in these surveys said, yeah, they did send their kids to bed without food. So I asked my supervisor, Oscar, and I said, is this right? And he said, yeah, that's just the ones that will admit it to you. There's actually more than that. When I came out here to Los Angeles shortly thereafter, I had to work temp jobs a lot when I first moved out. And soon after I got into the nonprofit field, I saw a couple of the guys I used to work with all the time on temp jobs at an event for homeless individuals. So that just brought it home to me that if it hadn't been for how fortunate I was with my contacts that I had out here, I very well could have been ended up a working homeless person just like these two guys had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got involved with an organization that's no longer here called the Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness. And about 7 years ago, we pulled the hunger projects out of that and started a separate entity, which is Hunger Action LA.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. How did you get involved, John?
I got involved because I've always been a community organizer in one form or another. I started off doing outreach with the Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness. And from that, I got hired by ACORN as a community organizer and got trained by ACORN as a community organizer and was doing organizing around welfare and workfare issues here in Los Angeles and built a significant organization here that was demanding workers' rights for people that were doing their general relief work, workfare work in exchange for their food stamps. Mm-hmm. But it's ironic, in 1997, while Frank was working at the Coalition to End Hunger and Homelessness, I stuck my head in the door there and they hired me to do some like just some basic outreach, going to shelters, going to sober livings, going to different places, talking to people about the general relief issue. This was at the time when they were trying to cut back, when they were going to cut back on general relief. Mm-hmm. And so I was appointed this person that would go to all these different places to do presentations or either just give out flyers and stuff to try to have people come and take an interest in what was getting ready to take place with general relief.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, exactly, Frank, what is Hunger Action LA?
So it's a couple of different things. It's like a hybrid, actually. On the policy level, which is talking about state policies and federal policies that affect hunger and food programs, it's a coalition. So there's a lot of organizations involved with this, without which Hunger Action LA wouldn't really be a strong force. LA CAN, which is a very familiar organization downtown, they're a strong part of Hunger Action LA. There's another organization called WORKS, Women Organizing Resources, Knowledge, and Services, affordable housing organization. They're working with their residents, getting them involved to fight, you know, for justice and food policies. Mm-hmm. Homeless Healthcare Los Angeles. These are some of the major organizations that are involved in it. So on one level, it's a coalition. Mm-hmm. On another level, we do what we like to think of as appropriate direct service. Mm-hmm. And this is the Market Match Program, which we'll talk about a little bit more later on. But this is a tangible way that we're getting more healthy food to people who are low income by working through 12 farmers markets in L.A. County. And so at these particular markets, people who are getting CalFresh benefits, that's what the food stamp program is called now here, CalFresh, or getting a SSI or getting WIC, can actually get additional bonus coupons to buy fruits and vegetables with. Because we've been, you know, we're all pushing everyone to have a healthier diet. Yeah. But we know that those things are more expensive. And especially during a recession, those are the type of foods that a family is likely to cut back on. Mm-hmm. So it's not just addressing the issue of hunger. It's also addressing the issue of malnutrition, which is widespread here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me ask you this. Why is there hunger in L.A., in Los Angeles?
So really, in the United States, hunger just comes down to one thing, and that's income. People don't make enough money to buy food, or they have to prioritize something else. And with a lot of seniors right now, that's rent or it's some kind of medicine that's not covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. In Southern California, we have about 750,000 people that are getting SSI. And for the listeners who might not be familiar, that's supplemental security income. It's like it's a payment from Social Security to people who are blind or elderly or disabled. Mm-hmm. A lot of people getting SSI, $866 a month. That's not enough to even keep a roof over your head in most parts of LA. So those people who do have a roof over their head with that $866, they're paying like 90% for rent, leaving them very little left over for food. And God forbid you have some sort of unexpected expense come up. Mm-hmm. So this is a lot of hunger. A lot of hunger is not visible hunger. These are people who are kind of, you know, they might be hidden away. They might be shut in. We have a doctor who comes to our meetings, Dr. Melnick from Public Health. He told me 5 years ago when the gas was hitting $5 a gallon, some of the social workers in Lancaster who make visits, home visits to the seniors, they found some of the seniors passed out because they couldn't afford the gas to drive 23 miles to Lancaster to get groceries. So again, it's a case of income or having to prioritize that income for something else, for whether it's your rent, your bills, your medicine, or even gasoline.
Okay, it's an economic issue.
Completely.
Now, let's talk about the farm bill. Can you explain exactly what is the farm
bill? I don't think anyone on this planet can explain the farm bill. The farm bill is kind of like a kitchen sink.
Yeah.
And how that kitchen sink came about. So to briefly explain it, it's a bill that covers funding for our farm programs. These are the subsidies you hear a lot about. These are payments that certain kinds of farmers get to basically keep them from suffering losses or to, you know, grow certain kind of crops. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, the funding for the supplemental nutrition program, that's the national name for the food stamp program, is SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. That also comes out of the farm bill. And so originally it was designed that way because the idea was that the rural states would want the money for the farm programs, you know, Iowa, Kansas, all the places that are corn from fence post to fence post. And the urban states wanted the money for their low-income residents. And so there's been this kind of bizarre collaboration over many years between those two sets of interests, the farmers and the people looking for supplemental nutrition payments. And originally, the food stamp program was designed to be a support for the American farmer as much as it was for the hungry person. Because in the original food stamp program, the coupons could only be used for American-grown products. And, you know, the first person they were thinking that they were looking out for was the farmer because there was too much produce on the market, and so the price collapsed, and so farmers were starting to suffer because of that. And it was during the Depression, so people didn't have any money to buy food. It's the same issue that's happening now. Mm-hmm. So the Farm Bill has been, in a way, this successful collaboration for a long time. Mm-hmm. But now people are starting to look at some of the distortion that's come about as a result of the Farm Bill. For example, for years and years, they've been paying for people to grow corn. They've made it very profitable for people to grow corn. They've grown so much corn that they've been able to take it to Mexico and undercut the Mexican farmer. So the Mexican farmer can't get the good price for his corn. So a lot of people working on corn farms in Mexico have had to come up here. So they've contributed to some of the issues of immigration and of people not being able to find sufficient work and therefore, you know, being forced to cross borders to get work. Mm-hmm. They've also made it, by growing so much corn, very cheap to produce high fructose corn syrup. And this is an ingredient that's been directly connected with type 2 diabetes. And back in the 1980s, that's when a lot of producers of different kinds of food, not just junk food and soda, you'll find high fructose corn syrup even in bread. They started buying this product because it was cheaper than sugar because of the government subsidy. And now we've been eating so much of that stuff that diabetes is off the charts in the U.S. So that's another distortion that comes about as a result of the Farm Bill. Last thing I'm going to say about it, the Farm Bill doesn't have support in it for fruits and vegetables, which is exactly what everyone is telling us you need to eat to be healthy. And partly it's because those are perishable products. You can't really store them in a silo like you can rice, wheat, something like that. But at the same time, you would think that our government, you know, it's talking out of both sides of the mouth. They're telling everyone that we have these high healthcare costs that are driven by poor diets, telling everyone they need to eat more fruits and vegetables, and yet the funding in the Farm Bill is going toward the same stuff that's getting us sick. Mm-hmm. So it's a dilemma that has yet to be resolved, and there's a lot of people that are trying to wrap their minds around this thing called the Farm Bill.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this question. You know, I grew up in the South, in Greenville, Mississippi, and, you know, one of the things that I remember clearly is the concept of canning food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where most people down South, you know, you have fresh food 12 months during the wintertime. You still had to help.
Right, because people were canning it themselves.
Yeah,
right?
they would can it from the garden. They would pull it straight from the garden and can it for the wintertime. Is there anything like that out here? You know, it's the canning concept?
You know, there's a little bit of that. And some of the folks, for example, at the Hollywood Farmers Market, they have a project called the Farmer's Kitchen that teaches people how to preserve.
Okay.
The guy who runs it is a master preserver, a master canner. And it's interesting that these things are being slowly rediscovered, just like the whole community garden phenomenon.
Yeah,
I remember talking with a guy from Alabama some years ago who said he couldn't even give away seeds because whereas out here, we've been so disconnected from gardening for a long time that now it's trendy. You know, where he had come from, people had grown up having to work in gardens. And to them, it was like, I don't need any more seeds. You don't need to tell me about this. I know what this work's all about.
Yeah. Okay. Look, let's talk about some of the free food programs in the government resources. Can we discuss them for a minute? Just touch on each one, starting with the food stamps.
Right. So food stamps, they've just made more confusing because As I've already kind of dropped a couple names, there's a new federal name for it, which is SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And then after we took a year to get used to that name, they changed the name locally in California to the CalFresh program. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to kind of put it in people's mind to buy fresh food, to kind of give it a health aspect. But there are now 47 million Americans getting food assistance through SNAP. This is double the number that typically usually gets it. And it's been at this record high level for years. So that means that one out of every seven Americans is basically getting food stamps. And so briefly, yes, we'll mention the WIC program. This is a program for women, infants, and children. Mm-hmm. So it's kids up to age 5. And it's, you know, it's not as diverse as the food stamp program. It's limited to particular foods, but those are the foods that are high in protein or that are good for a pregnant or breastfeeding woman or for a young child.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? How is that available to the community? If, a female with children just coming out here to California, how would they tap into that?
There is an 800 number for WIC, and I don't have it right here on me. Mm-hmm. We do have a guide to all of these social services that's called the People's Guide to Welfare, Health, and Other Services.
Great little book.
And so, so you've seen that.
Yeah.
So,
is that the red book?
That's the red book. Yes. that's what it's known as. We're actually working on the next edition, which should be out by the end of July or August. Mm-hmm. And maybe at the end of the show, we'll give the number so that if people want a copy of it, they can call us. Okay. Although we're running out fast, I should tell you. Okay. And then, as you mentioned here, we've got child nutrition programs. And these have an interesting history because it was actually the Black Panthers who pioneered the concept of the school breakfast program, mm-hmm. who kind of made the connection between the fact that the kid hadn't eaten in the morning and his ability to learn. And so that was adopted by the federal government in the 60s. The school lunch program goes back a little further, and that was at the end of World War II. They realized that during World War II, because of the Depression, so many of the people they drafted, they had to turn away because they were undernourished. They were too skinny. And so it was President Truman that signed in the school lunch program in 1946 after the war because they said, this is a defense issue. This is national security. We had too many skinny guys that we were trying to send to combat. And so we don't want that to ever happen again. Mm-hmm. And ironically now, you know, it seems like obesity is more the issue, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm about that.
So we'll briefly mention also the summer lunch program. When the kids are out of school, there's a lot of places that that they can eat, that they can get a free meal, usually parks and schools and places like that. However, this program is on the decline in LA County, so it would be good for people to call around and ask about this, about why is this program being cut back.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a minute, too.
And then, can I just chime in for a minute? I mean, yeah. There's so many contradictions with this, with food. They have, on the one hand, they have the language that promotes healthy eating, that promotes signing up for these programs and stuff, but yet at the same time, they'll deny people that clearly are entitled to eating healthy and hungry. For instance, right now, if you sold some marijuana 10 years ago in order to just, as a youth, say 10 years ago, you sold a $5 bag of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Now, what that does essentially is excludes you from ever being able to sign up for food stamps in your lifetime. Now, imagine having a child molester, a killer, a robber, a whole line of hideous crimes that people may commit. And here's this young person that may have sold some marijuana as an experiment when he was young and got arrested. Right now, today, as it stands in California, they'll be denied. Mm-hmm. And if everybody else lined up, if you had 10 people that committed homicides and went to prison and got out, 10 people that had, there's pedophiles or rapists or whatever, mm-hmm. if you take 100 people down there and 10 of them happen to be people that assigned, that happened to have sold some marijuana, those 10 would not get it, mm-hmm. but everybody else would.
Yeah, let me, what wow. was, I remember when that happened, what was the rationale? Well, keep because I remember this was during the crack epidemic, so-called crack epidemic thing, when they came down on the war on drugs, part of that. But what was the rationale for keeping a human being from able to access food stamps?
It was pure politics.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This was during that whole 1994 Newt Gingrich contract with America thing.
Yeah.
And it was actually Phil Gramm from Texas who came up with this whole idea. Let's not give food to anyone who had any kind of drug offense. And what's interesting is that they made it a state option shortly after that. And mm-hmm. 35 states have removed these restrictions. But as John pointed out, California is one of the 15 that still has this restriction in some form. And so that's something that Hunger Action LA is actually intending on addressing when we go to Sacramento.
Yeah. Okay. Now, how about some of the other good programs, the adult care food programs and the senior nutrition programs? You talk a little about that.
Well, senior nutrition is going to become, you know, a greater and greater concern because everyone that was born in that baby boom in the late 40s and 50s is now going to be in need of services. And so, on the one hand, this is going to turn into a gigantic service industry. And on the other hand, what is going to be the quality of that industry when there's so many people competing in it and so many people who need to be served? Mm-hmm. So, you know, senior meal programs right now are generally these like they'll ask for $2 donation, but you don't need to provide it. And they're provided at senior centers, churches, and some other places like that. There's about 200 sites in L.A. County. Mm-hmm. And you can call the Area Agency on Aging, or you can even just call 211. Actually, 211 is a good number to call for a referral to any kind of food program because they've got the whole list on computer. And you can actually look up a lot of that on the website called healthycity.org.
Healthycity.org.
Yeah, healthycity.org.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you this. We're getting ready to work with a collective. At least we already work with a collective of a nonprofit organization, cultural arts organizations, and they're beginning to work on putting some after-school programs in the Florence, Normandy, Vermont, Florence area where you know the Rides was at. Like that, they're working on that now, and I know part of that is going to be the breakfast program, nutrition program. How do after-school programs like that tap into food programs that can provide food for these after-school programs for these underserved youngsters?
Well, I think there's a couple routes to that. One is they can get reimbursement from the federal breakfast program. They can sign up to become, and I'm not sure if there's any limitations on what kind of schools or programs can do that, but they can actually get some federal funding either through the school breakfast program or the child care program to get reimbursements for that, and that will help them cover some of the costs. Mm-hmm. But I think there's another angle, and that's the angle of fresh food, of local food. You know, we can have a program that reimburses us for buying food for the kids, but what kind of food are we buying? Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? Is it from that same corporate food system that right now is putting all that corn syrup, you know, all that junk food, and that's exploiting workers, or that's pumping up our turkeys with so many antibiotics that I don't know if you saw last week in the news, they found like this new drug-resistant strains of bacteria in turkey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the turkey that's being promoted as the lean, healthy alternative to beef. But if it's grown by the same industrial process, what is it that we're feeding our kids? So there's two angles. One is the funding, which comes from the government programs. That's great. But can we use that funding to get fresh and locally grown food that we know was grown with environmentally sustainable methods? And I think, John, I don't know if you want to talk about a little collective that you know about that's actually been gathering food.
Which one? The rack.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during the time of the immigrants' rights marches that were going on here in Los Angeles, these huge marches where people start really becoming enlightened and realizing that we're all kind of interconnected one way or another. During the course of this at MacArthur Park, it was over on the news. People were marching through the park, and the police had a confrontation with a whole lot of folks and shot people, shot news media. You could have been there doing covering it as a news item. And they shot multiple people, shot some in the eye, shot some. And it was a class action lawsuit that was given as a result of it. So it was some politically conscious folks out of that whole collective of people that were involved with this that said, well, what do we do with the resources that come out of this? And so they said, why don't we kind of feed the people in this community, Ground Zero, where this stuff took place at, and let's start a process where we go and collect food from food banks and missions and any place else that have extra overflow of food that's non-perishable that they can have on Sundays from 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
They
distribute this food, but what was really really creative about it was that they started off doing it themselves. Now it's become a community-driven event itself because the people of the community have kind of set the rules and the guidelines and the regulations on how the whole process takes place.
And that that's my community too. I stay one block from there, every week, 6 in Coronado. Okay. I'm one block from it. But look, we got a call on the line. I want to come back to that. Who am I speaking with?
Hi, Melvin. It's Georgiana Williams.
Hey, Georgiana.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
We was just talking about the after-school program that you guys is trying to put together in that Florence and Normandy area. And was talking about food and nutrition.
We'll be needing some for the after-school program.
Yeah, you have a question for our guests here?
Well, I sure hope they put they get some information on our after-school program and help us out with the food. And
you're
doing great work, and I thank God for you.
Yeah.
What's the timeline on this thing being launched?
Earlene, you wanted we were looking in June. We're laying the foundation for it now. Hopefully within the next couple months. We definitely want this rolling by the time this school year comes around.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Georgiana,
I wanted to announce that I'm having a bake sale May 11th at 1323 West 69th Street. And all the funds go to Almost Midnight Prison. Mm-hmm. A nurse I used to work with got in trouble, and once she got out, she got involved in going back into the prison. And one of the things that really upset me was she went to Arkansas last year. And she told me that they still have the chain gangs down there. Mm. But even worse, when you got a lot of brothers and sisters I don't really know how they got arrested way down there, but we know if you commit a crime, you have to do the time. But the thing is, down there, when you do your time, if you don't have a family or friend in Arkansas, you don't get out of prison. So we having a bake sale, because I encouraged her to get a halfway house or a sober living home, mm-hmm. so the brothers and sisters can come out of prison and start their life over. So for the last 2 years, I stay up a day and night for 1 week cooking pies and cakes and peach cobblers and sell it, and all the money goes to Almost Midnight. Mm-hmm. So I want to say to the moms and dads out there, if you have a son or daughter in prison, will you please come out and support Almost Midnight Prison Ministry?
Now, tell us again where the bake sale is at, the time.
1323 West 69th Street. That's between Normandy and Raymond. And the time is 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And everybody in South L.A. know that I can cook.
For sure.
So you're going to have some peach cobblers and all that kind of stuff there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one thing.
Potato pies and red velvet cake, a carrot cake, what made me sick last week, and some pound cakes, a pound of butter, pound of sugar, 8 eggs,
yeah.
4 cups of flour, 3 teaspoons of baking powder.
Yeah.
Now, and cook it for an hour and 15 minutes, mm-hmm. and to stir it up with a lot of love.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we could possibly do to help, and I don't know what the timeline is, we do an online magazine, and we send out to thousands of people here in Southern California around food policy and stuff, and it gets out. It went out today, but we may be able to send out a special edition that has some of the stuff on it that we email to, like, multiple organizations and multiple individuals here in Southern California. So
definitely send it to us. Yeah. I'll mm-hmm. make sure the email.
And I think that Georgina hit on a very pertinent topic, which is that of prison ministry and people coming out of prison, because that's actually the theme of Hunger Action Day, which is in Sacramento this year on May 22nd, is called Ignoring Hunger is the Real Crime. Mm-hmm. It's about right. the criminalization of poverty. People are made into criminals just because they've been poor. And so John right. gave one example with you know, people who have these past certain drug felonies being punished essentially for their entire life by not being allowed to access food assistance. And as anyone on Skid Row knows, that same thing applies to people who are homeless.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, not allowed to sit, not allowed to rest, not allowed to even have possessions. So two bills that we are supporting in Sacramento by going up to Sacramento and bringing people with us, many of whom are affected directly. One is called AB5, the Homeless Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it was a stroke of genius to call this the Homeless Bill of Rights, because that got more people involved than I've ever seen in years mm-hmm. in addressing some of these issues. A lot of people have just given up on policies and things. But so the Homeless Bill of Rights is one. And the other is a Senate bill. It's SB 283. That would remove those restrictions on people, regardless of what kind of felony they had.
Yeah.
Look, everyone's got to eat. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who they are or what they did. If they're, I mean, you're paying how much a year to feed them while they're in prison?
Mm-hmm.
$40,000 a year, and then they come out of prison and
they can't get a job.
Yeah, they've supposedly done their time, and now you don't want to let them have $75 a month in food stamps. It doesn't make any sense.
Now, George, let me ask you this before I let you go. Because I know you come from down south, just like
Vicksburg,
I do.
Vicksburg, Mississippi.
Yeah, Vicksburg, Mississippi.
I was a sharecropper's daughter.
Why do you think people were so healthy then as opposed to
now? Because we ate right. Everything we ate, it was growing in the garden, and we didn't use all that pesticides and all that fertilizer. Don't you remember, Melvin, you had to clean that hen house out?
Yeah. That's right, and that had a lot to do with the
everything
quality
was
of food.
Fresh.
Yeah, John, you wanted to say something?
I just think, just in terms of looking at community organizing as a whole, and it's a simple concept of bringing people together, formulating the plan, and then helping people to take action on a plan that they essentially make themselves. And so how do you get to critical mass? How do you get to the most people rather than the least people? Because the bigger the band, the sweeter the music. The more people that you get together, the bigger the problem is that you'll be able to solve. And you look at these connecting issues what do we have in common that's bigger than those things that we're allowing to keep us apart? One of the things that we have in common is that we all got to eat.
It's a natural issue
that we can find some common space in, and we may not agree on everything around food and what those policies and procedures is around food, but we certainly will agree that we need to figure out a way to kind of make sure that everybody is eating and everybody's eating healthy. So how do we get people together and bring them together to come up with a plan and then start taking action with those plans? A classic example of that is going up to Sacramento and taking it to the people that actually make the policies and procedures that help to sign off on or vote for these laws. If they don't hear from the people that are impacted by these laws and these procedures, then they feel like whatever they're doing is all right.
Okay. We're going to talk about that in details after the community calendar when you talk about the Sacramento trip. Okay, hey, thank you, Georgiana, for calling.
Okay, Melvin, you guys have a great evening.
You too.
God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, Melvin, bring a tape so I can send it to my sister.
Okay,
I
will.
Thank you. All right.
Okay, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we open up our roundtable and continue our discussion with Hunger Action LA.
This is the community calendar for the month of May. The Veterans Community Theater Workshop will be held on Tuesday, May the 7th from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's free to veterans as well as non-veterans. The workshop participants are currently working on writing individual stage plays and also rehearsing the stage play Surviving the Nickel. The location of the Vortex is 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. This is near the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. And the Metro bus number 60 and 66 stops near or close to the corner. For more information about the community workshop, you can call 213-908-6587. Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Georgiana Williams and others will be having a bake sale. All proceeds will go to Almost Midnight Prison Ministry. And this will help inmates when they get released from prison. All donations are tax deductible. And the location is 1323 West 69th Street. And for more information, you can call 909-427-0234. Saturday, May the 25th at 4 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran, the Sana Play Reading Series, in celebration of Memorial Day, presents the play, The 101 Club, written by Judith Bowman and Melvin Ishmael Johnson. The 101 Club is about Freeman Field's Mutiny, a series of incidents at Freeman Army Airfield near Seymour, Indiana, in 1945, in which African-American members of the 477th Bombardment Group attempted to integrate an all-white officers club. Also on the program is a short play entitled Private Johnson's War, written by Relvin Roosevelt Johnson. The play is about overcoming racism in the Army in the early 1970s. Special musical guests will be Willis and Shante. The location of this event is the United University Church USC Fellowship Hall, 817 West 34th Street. This is a free event and all are welcome to attend. For more information on the Memorial Day celebration, you can call Judith Bowman, 626-703-1230, or Melvin Ishmael Johnson, 213-479-1764. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Miss Arlene Anthony. The next few weeks in May, we will be bringing you comments and interviews from students that came to visit Skid Row in the downtown Los Angeles community from Winona University of Minnesota, New York University, and UCLA. Let's listen to some students visiting from Winona University of Minnesota.
Okay, you have questions for us.
This is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Coomeran Report. I'm here with some students from Winona University, and then I'm here, who am I here with?
Emma, Steph, Kelly,
Quinn,
Haley,
Katrina.
Katrina, okay. Tell us why are you here in Los Angeles?
We're here to experience the culture of Los Angeles and see an area that none of us have been before.
This is our spring break, so we're kind of doing some different service stuff and just seeing the city.
We are on an alternative spring break, so we're here in this nice weather to do some service and hang out with the people here. So,
yeah, pretty much all that was said.
We're also helping out at the Hope Street Children's Center every day. We're working with the students there.
And we've learned a lot about a lot of different groups of people here that need to, awareness needs to be brought up about.
Okay. And then you've also brought some hygiene kits out here, and you passed out a few of them. What are you going to do with the rest of them? Are you going to leave them for the Friday group? Yeah. Tell us what your name and what you major in.
My name's Emma Hornstein, and I'm an elementary education major.
I'm Steph Brummer, and I am a social work major.
I'm Kelly Bergman, and I'm also a social work major.
I'm Quinn Hobbs, and I'm an elementary education major.
I'm Haley, and I'm a biology major.
And I'm Katrina, and I'm also a biology major.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much from the students from Winona University, and that's in Minnesota, right? Yeah, so glad to have them out. This is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Coomeran Report. Thank you very much. Now, that's students from Winona University of Minnesota. And then on Wednesday, April the 24th, 2013, students from UCLA visited Skid Row and passed out over 200 hygiene kits at the LAMP community located at 526 San Pedro. And I had a chance to talk to the fine arts director of the LAMP community. Yeah, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Coomeran Report. I'm over here at the LAMP Community, beautiful facility, getting ready to do a performance over here. And I'm over here with one of the artistic directors over here. I'm speaking with who?
We're speaking to Haik Mahmoudan.
Yeah.
And thank you for being here.
Yeah. Haik, can you tell us a little about the LAMP Arts Program over here?
Absolutely. Thank you, Melvin. So the arts program, of course, is one of the services of LAMP Community, which is an agency that provides housing and services to Los Angeles' most vulnerable individuals, primarily adults living with mental illness. The arts program is extended, though, to the entire Skid Row community and is rooted in the firm belief that arts and creativity can be a very stabilizing, therapeutic element in people's lives. And we're a studio program, which means that we encourage the artists to participate for many hours a week, coming, working on long-term projects, and really making arts a consistent part of their lives. Mm-hmm. In addition, we, of course, have workshops such as poetry workshops and photography workshops to create a more structured environment for artists to participate in that way as well.
Mm-hmm. And then also, we got some UCLA students coming to hand out some hygiene kits. Would it be the first time for a program like this?
Absolutely. We're really excited to collaborate with Coomeran Drama Stage and with the UCLA students to bring this kind of combination of theater and then hygiene kits, which are such an indispensable thing in our community. We're really excited to have our doors open to the entire community coming in and engaging in this kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Haik. That's Haik over here at the LAMP community. Okay. Haik over at the LAMP communities. And thanking them and the students from UCLA. Next week, we will be hearing from some of the students from New York University, UCLA, in an interview with Pastor Tony Stallworth of the Central City Church of the Nazarene. We're back in our studio with our in-studio guests from Hunger Action LA, Frank Tamborillo, John Jackson, and we're going to close out with our roundtable. I want to talk about the special event coming up on the 22nd, beginning on the 21st. Can you guys talk about that, going up to Sacramento?
Yeah, once a year, we do a set of a series of trainings here locally in Los Angeles on how to engage with legislators as well as policymakers or their staff about the issues that are impacting the communities that we come out of. And rather than going up and speaking for a certain segment of the population, we feel like it's more appropriate to kind of help build that skill set with them people that they can go and talk and communicate with the legislators themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been an ongoing process every year. And so it's growing every year. It's growing across the state every year. We started off probably with a van, a couple of carloads of people. Mm-hmm. Now it's a couple of busloads of people from Los Angeles that goes up. We go up with, we'll go one day and just spend the night and then come back the next day. Well, we do a series of activities on the net the following day.
Can you give us the basic information, you know, the date of leaving, the time, et cetera,
so
like that?
If you want to come
up, I want to get some closing comments.
Yeah,
we still got a couple minutes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to come up with us on the bus, we are leaving on Tuesday, May 21st at 9 a.m. We'll be leaving from St. Mary's Church at 961 South Mariposa. For more details, and because there's quite a bit of details, please call us at 213-388-8228.
Yeah.
That's 213-388-8228.
Yeah.
And just to add on to what John said, although we all do need to be giving each other food directly, but by doing this legislative policy advocacy, you can feed millions of people because mm-hmm. you can change those regulations that are holding back thousands of people from getting food assistance, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Man, we're running out of time, man. There's so much I want to talk about. We got to get you guys back in here. You hadn't seen the last of us. Yeah, spend some time talking about this then. So thank you very much. I'd like to extend a special thanks to Frank Tamborillo, John Jackson from Hunger Action LA, on the line with Nancy Meal of the Spiritual Woman, George Anna Williams calling in, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, skidrow.la. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report, and from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Darker Than Blue by Willis and Shante.
Are we going?